I'm just going with the flow, so.
You're listening to Three Wise Truck Guys from Key Advisors.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Three Wise Truck Guys. I'm Keith Ely. I'm joined today by Mark Martinsic. Morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good, Keith. I hope you're well. Okay, it's been a hot summer, and but I'm in a cool spot and ready to discuss whatever we're going to discuss today. Yeah. What's our topic today?
Well, I guess John can't join us today, so it's just two wise truck guys today. He'll be back with us again on our next one. He'll be back with us again
I'm going to miss him. I always enjoy his insights.
So. I do too. You know, we talked, I think it was the last one that we talked about used trucks, wasn't it, Mark?
Yes.
You know, it was, so it's, as we've been traveling in July, it's been interesting to hear discussions from people about what's happening on the used truck market and what the values are doing. And it's pretty much what John said was happening. Like he knows what he's talking about.
I think he does.
I think he does too. So what does, speaking of happening in the market, what is happening out there, Mark?
You know, we always do, you know, what have we seen really good? Right. What have we seen bad? And I've kind of got a statement that, that talks about it without giving you some specifics, okay? And what made me think of this is we're doing a project right now for a client to help them find the perfect service manager for one of their locations, okay? And I got to thinking about all the things. What is the perfect service manager? Okay, you know, I've told the story before. I got the role because I was a good foreman, and I got that role because I was a good mechanic back in those days. And there wasn't any training that went with the job. Okay, and I won't go through that whole thing about how I learned. Okay, but I find that's still the case in many cases. And I was somewhat surprised with the quality candidates that we were able to get and talk to for this client. Okay. But then I start thinking, go a little bit deeper. Okay. What defines a well-run service department? Okay. And I think that most dealers, if not all, okay, focus on performance metrics pretty well. What's their gross profit percentage? What's their expenses as percent of sales or gross? What's technician efficiency or productivity or proficiency and effective labor rate and all the things that matter that drive the financial statement results? But you could have really good numbers matching up to whoever's benchmarks you look at. Hopefully they're ours, okay? But are you processing as much work as you can? You know, the other aspect is technicians are hard to find, and it's become harder lately because it's so hard to find. The pay rates are going up and staying up with that. I talked to dealers that have had to make two or three adjustments in how they pay their techs this year, and we're only in August, okay? Because it's everybody's offering more money to try and get that expertise. Okay, so you put all that together, okay, and we could have really good numbers, but leaving a lot on the table, right? Are we getting the throughput, the capacity that we truly have with our shop, with our people, and so forth? And that requires a look at not just the performance metrics, okay, but the process metrics as well. How do you process jobs? And I know I'm going on a little bit here, but we talk about the rule of twos. I think we've mentioned that a couple of times on these podcasts. And for those of you that maybe not have heard it, we know that the most profitable repair orders are those that from arrow open to first punch is 2 hours or less. From first to last punch is two times the build hours. Okay, so that's 4 hours within 8 hours. And the last punch to invoice is 2 days, which is all about cash flow and that lag time, okay? But to get to there, it's not about the typical performance metrics that we look at. It's about process measurements. And if you want to call it value stream mapping, which it really is, okay, at some extent, okay, but reducing the waste in the process is what gets you there. Okay, so where do you get process measurements? Well, the OEs are helping everybody today with the different decisive products, whether it's PACCAR Solutions or Assist or I think Isuzu Connect and so on and so forth, or through Uptime Pro or through I360 if you're Navistar and so forth, and you're getting reports and you're being measured on that, okay, but you know, the things you have to do to meet their requirements tie right back to this rule of twos, not specifically, but in general, and it's about process measurements. And I guess the takeaway from all of that, okay, is that focusing on those process measurements, the waste in your process, the value to the customer, the time the truck is dropped off to the time it's delivered or picked up by the customer versus the actual build hours that was of value to the customer, is where the capacity comes from your current number of techs. And building capacity is why we're looking for techs. So you kind of roll all that together, okay?
Right.
And instead of looking at these OE technology and performance reports that they're measuring, okay, about throughput as extra work, and sometimes they are, sometimes it makes double work and so forth to get those things done. The benefit of focusing on those measurements can have a huge impact on your service department. So that's kind of my soapbox preaching this morning. Okay. If you want to know more about that, maybe we should do a podcast just on that at some point.
I think we should. You know, I think the rule of twos is fascinating, Mark. And from a standpoint of, you know, the huge change in repair work performance, profitability, gross profit percentage, whatever you want to call it, and tech efficiency on those that meet the rule of two. And of course, they build on each other. So you meet one rule of two, it's a little better. Two rule of twos, it's a little better than that. And you meet all three rule of twos, and it's just unbelievably different than a repair order that doesn't meet any of them. You know, it's right. Just a crazy number different. And you know, the ability to understand that, you know, what the rule of twos are and how you can start to impact it, to me, has been fascinating to me. That was not my best thing that I was going to talk about, but I'm gonna tag team with you because I know that we've been working with several customers on this rule of two thing here in the last 6 to 9 months. And I know one of the larger groups that we deal with, you know, I don't know what, probably 35, 40 rooftops that they have. I was told by one of our folks that's working closely with some of the managers of that group, that if you walk into the service department now, they have big signs hanging inside the shop that say rule of twos. And they're seeing that the more that they work toward that rule of two and meeting it, and then understanding why they can't meet it, right? To dissect the repair orders of why they didn't meet it. Is it a process issue? Was it just a time of day that they couldn't make it no matter what? Was it a lack of people? But understanding the whys behind that are just huge. And so what's interesting is when you get their numbers at the end of the month compared to year over year, the differences are vast, and their headcounts are actually down a little bit, you know, at the consolidated level. So it's interesting.
Yeah. We have talked about culture and retaining employees or onboarding employees and so forth on one of our podcasts. And what you see for the dealers that do focus on this and do have impacts on it. And a rule of two is just a way to measure your impact on that process, okay? Knowing that those are the most profitable repair orders, okay? That approach not only enhances your capacity, your throughput, and the other key performance indicators that we traditionally look at, but it does cultivate a culture because it takes people to get involved in doing it, okay? I guess a culture of continuous improvement, okay?
Yeah.
Which obviously the benefits aren't just in my performance indicators or the amount of service or the amount of throughput I put through, but if I'm turning the truck quicker, okay, it's about customer loyalty and resale to those same customers and so forth. So
yep.
There's a lot of benefits to it. It's a lot of hard work. It's nothing that we haven't been teaching for years, but now we kind of have a tagline to go with it.
Right. So. I think your culture thing is interesting because our guests that we're going to introduce here in a minute, one of the things that that I've had the opportunity to teach some classes with him that we work on is this thing called a transformation path. And it's certainly not a straight line, but it really looks at where do you spend your time in doing your job. And I think there's 8 steps in that transformation path, and the higher up you get on it, the better leader, the better. I don't like the term manager. Managers manage things. Leaders lead. So, the better leader you are, the higher up you go on this path, and the better financial performance you get. The top one is about, I think the top one is defined as culture and succession. And so we always are talking about the idea of building culture. It's squishy, right? It's you can't put a definition to it per se, but you know it when it's there, and you really know it when it's not there.
Right.
And so I think that culture thing is such a big deal. And I guess that's a pretty good segue to move us into our topic for this month and then for next month, which is education. We do have a special guest today, but Mark, what is, what's the importance as you look at it in terms of education to a dealership, to an operation?
Well, the obvious things are, right, you're going to do a better job, you're going to treat customers better, and the best way to get something done, the most efficient way to get something done. But if I go back to my earlier comments of what is the perfect service manager, there's not a lot of those out there, okay? That doesn't mean you don't have a candidate that can reach that level or improve his level, and education helps with that. Okay, tremendously. Okay,
yeah.
Understanding all these metrics we're talking about, both the performance side, the culture side, the process side, and so forth. Okay, so obviously it's critical. Again, if I go back to how I started, there wasn't much education as I moved up the ladder, right? Okay, there was the danger of the Peter principle of promoting somebody to a level of incompetency, right? Okay.
Right.
Of happening. Luckily, I overcame that with the help of some other people, but not everybody does. Okay. So I think investing in your people, okay, enhances all these other things that we're talking about. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
I think of education as, I think first of all, as the little phrase that I think we've all seen. If you think education is expensive, try ignorance, right?
Right.
What it costs you. But I think the real value of education is not teaching somebody what to think. Certainly, teaching them the basics of how the math works or how the process works or those types of things. But you really teach them how to start thinking, how to be a critical thinker. And I think that is the beauty of this. So, without further ado, our special guest today is Alan Phibbs. Alan is the director of education for Key Advisors. And Alan, welcome to the podcast. We're glad that you're here today.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I got an education listening to the comments before.
it's Mark and I were talking in a meeting we had last night, but I know he had a call with a possible customer yesterday, and I had one last week, and they both commented how they really enjoy listening to the podcast, and I'm sure people will find this even better than the ones we've done in the past, because I think this is a fascinating subject that we're going to talk about.
And so, we have Alan on there.
So, and we've got Alan, and that makes it
a fourth wise truck guy today.
There you go. Okay. Alan,
I'll
real
be
quick,
the third one today.
There you go. Real quick, Alan, how did you, not how did you get here today, but how did you get to the role that you hold now with Key Advisors? Tell us a little bit about Alan Phibbs.
It's interesting you ask. I was working on a keynote presentation that I'm doing for a dealer group in September, and they wanted some information so they could introduce me or I could introduce myself. And the first thing that came to my mind was the song, "It's a Long and Winding Road." And you kind of mentioned that with the transformation path, but my background is accounting. I'm a CPA and practiced accounting for a number of years. I lost count. But actually was introduced to this business through public accounting. I had a dealer group that was, I was responsible for their annual audit. And after I left the CPA firm, was doing some other things. And I always like to tell people that I finally decided I had made financial statements look as good as I could possibly make them look. My wife says I had a midlife crisis. You can decide which one of us you want to believe. But I reached out to the CFO. He and I had been friends for quite some time. And I just said, "Hey, you guys have any openings? I'm tired of doing accounting." And after some conversations and some interviews, actually was the first non-salesperson that they hired as a general manager. And through that process, I knew early in accounting, I knew something was missing. And I guess I was to use your term earlier, ignorant or uninformed or something, inexperienced, to really know what was missing. And I was introduced to some education programs where I met you, Keith, and I realized what was missing at that time and discovered that I had a passion for education. Teaching others and actually making a difference and where you could see that difference being made. I mean, the financial statement doesn't really make a difference. And then that led to certainly, you and I created a relationship, and I think, this business is a relationship business, and many are, but, we grew our relationship and I started working with Key Advisors and then got to actually become an instructor. And that led to leading education and consulting at NADA and then led me to introduction to the Maxwell Leadership Group. And so everything just started coming together. And a lot of people say, "Well, how did you get here?" I don't exactly know how I got here. Some of it was intentional, some of it wasn't. But I know for sure, if I hadn't been where I've been, I wouldn't be where I am. And most of that has to do with the relationships and the industry. I love the industry. It has its ups and downs. But one thing I'm fairly certain about. I'm very certain about, not fairly, at least in my lifetime anyway, transportation industry is not going away. And, trains, planes, and drones can only deliver things so much or so far, and it's going to take a truck to deliver to its final destination. And it's just, when you can share that excitement or belief with the employees of a dealership, you see a change in their attitude, their mindset, their perspective. But that's how I got here. It is a long and winding road, but it's been a fun one. And I'm not ready to quit yet.
Well, that's good.
I want to keep having fun.
We're not ready for you to quit either. So Mark, got any questions for Alan?
You know, Alan, you've been doing this for a while. Who are your customers? Is it every
Well,
dealer or?
no, Mark, it's, when we think about education, and Keith and I, and Key Advisors has been involved in this for quite some time, and it started out with what we call traditional succession, from one generation to the next, to the next, to the next, and so on. And over the last, I don't know, 20 years probably, we've seen that traditional succession start to change. And it's generational for sure. Younger generations want to do things different. The mature industry that we're in is oftentimes not as appealing to younger generation. And I think that's a fault of the industry, not necessarily conveying the interest. So we've gotten into kind of moving in that direction. There's been a lot of consolidations. I mean, you look at some of the largest dealers in the country have either expanded or acquired smaller dealerships. And when you do that, there's this thing called bench strength. And kind of to your point earlier, Mark, about finding and developing service manager technicians and so on, with that change in succession, we've actually tagged it transition. And so transition planning, we talk it has to do with the value of the business. And the value of the business has everything to do with the people that go with it. You've probably heard the saying, if it weren't for the people, it'd be a great job. I kind of add on to that now. If it weren't for the people, you wouldn't have a job. And so we've got to figure out, it is the people that makes the job what it is. I mean, and the relationships that are established in the dealerships. And in order for either a retiring dealer or a dealer that a growing dealer, whatever the case may be, there's got to be value in that business. And for that value to hold, you've got to have the people there that maintain those values with those customers. So this whole education program is about, building the strength of the people within in that dealer group. Yes, we work with with OEMs and peer groups. We have we have a dealer specific peer group. We have some OEM peer groups. I know there's three that I work with. I know Mark, you work with at least one or two. Keith works with one. So that's another avenue. We have programs through the DMS providers. And then our main focus is dealer groups. And so that typically, would have multiple locations. I can't put a number on it, but certainly the larger dealer groups are going to have more opportunity to educate more people so that they can continue to grow their business and maximize the value, regardless of what they do with it, whether they sell it or continue from one generation to the next. So that's a little
So
bit about our customers and how we approach it.
it's interesting that you term it education and not training. Do you want to talk to that a little bit?
Well, I've heard it said that you can train a dog, to jump, to eat, to run, to fetch a stick, and what have you. And I guess you can train people to do that too. But you educate people, and education is something that sticks. And education can change lives. And when I think about education, there's a few other pieces that come with it. Education empowers people. It shows that there's value placed on them. And then education equips them as well with knowledge and even tools that they need to do their job and to advance potentially in their position. So, I think the education is something that it is intentional. It's not something that is by accident. It has to be intentional. And when it's done correctly, You know, starting with the leader of the organization, when it's done correctly, it creates, it even adds value to the business that I mentioned earlier.
You mentioned the word empower, and my perception would be if I train somebody to do something, they're going to likely to keep doing it that way forever. If they're empowered and they're educated, they might find a better way to do it. Is that accurate?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. When you look at training, it's compliance, I guess, is the way I would describe it.
I like that term. I love that term.
Yeah.
Sorry, Alan. Didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay. So training is somewhat compliance. I mean, but when you empower someone, it gives them freedom, flexibility. That doesn't take boundaries away. It actually expands the boundaries. And, you know, there's always an answer. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, their answer, unfortunately, their answer is not the best answer. And, but there's always an answer and there's always a better answer. So, you know, educating people and empowering them, equipping them and putting them into an environment, you know, culture that you talked about a few minutes ago, Keith, you know, putting them into an environment, a learning environment, whether it's formal or informal, where they can take what they've learned, apply it, even explore, and find better ways of doing things. And that's really, you know, what I think that's the real top value of education is being able to accomplish that.
I think that's interesting that you said that, Alan, about the, you know, being able to explore. I use the term experiment a lot, and a couple of the over BI folks just cringe when I say the term experiment because, you know, they think I'm going to try and blow something up. But I think whether it's experiment or explore or whatever it is, I think within reason, right, giving somebody the opportunity to try something, to see if it works, to figure out, hey, I failed at it. Here's why it failed. Here's what I can do to fix it. But I think it goes back to that whole idea of, you know, of how do you start to critically think about something, right? Not exactly. Just accepting that gross profit, it should be 75% or whatever it is, but maybe it can be better than that, you know?
Exactly.
So, hey, when you were talking to Mark, you were going through some different services that your division offers. One of the things I know that you talk a lot about and that you get really fired up about, so certainly the leadership piece of it, but you've kind of combined the leadership piece with some longer term education program that I think you're calling Emerging Leaders. Could you talk to us just a little bit about what that is and why it's so important? Sure. I know that we've targeted, not targeted, but the larger groups are the natural candidates for this. Right. Could you talk a little bit about Emerging Leaders and what that is?
Sure, absolutely. So thank you for asking. So Emerging Leaders is just that. They're emerging. And so what does emerging mean? Well, some emerging leaders are already in a leadership role. And I really hesitate and reluctant to use a manager role. I believe that you manage stuff and you lead people. And you know, we're all leaders in one way or another, starting with ourselves. But the emerging leaders are, you know, is intended to recognize existing leaders and then perhaps identify high potential leaders, in this case, in a dealership environment, a dealer group environment. So perhaps you have existing leaders that might be in currently in a department role, department manager, that, you know, may have potential to become a branch manager, general manager. You may have branch manager, general managers that may have the opportunity to become a more of a corporate leader, whether it's a, you know, regional or central position. And it goes back to Keith, what I mentioned a few minutes ago about transition planning. And without a bench, there's really no transition, and the value of a business is not going to be maximized. The other piece that's really important with emerging leaders and the empowerment that we talked about earlier is retention. And retention is not just in the truck dealership and trailer dealership industry, it's across the world really. And organizations that are showing good or great retention numbers are intentionally identifying and recognizing opportunities for emerging leaders and next level. So that's what emerging leaders is, and that's not something that we identify. It's up to the dealer group to identify who those people are. What is their career path, for lack of a better term, and then having that structure in place where they can learn not only leadership skills but also basic and fundamental operating practices of a successful dealership operation.
So, what are some of the components of that, Alan, of the Emerging Leader Program? I know you talked about the leadership side of it, but I mean, are you looking at all departments, and does it take into account DMS? Does it take into account OE things? I mean, what does that look like to a
absolutely. To a dealership? So it's the intent of the Emerging Leaders Program is that it's tailored to the dealer's needs. Now, there are some basic, foundational and fundamental pieces that basic financial statement type of education that's there. But then it's tailored to the dealer's needs. And what I mean by that, Keith, is it is indeed tailored to the peculiarities or uniqueness, depending on how you look at it, of a dealer's, their DMS system, their manufacturer. That while they all have some similarities, they all have some differences. And then within a dealer group, they all have a DMS, they all have an OEM, but they may even have specific internal third-party software or even internally created software and processes that they use. So we combine all of that, tailor it to the dealer's needs. We engage and actually co-teach, if you will, each of the programs or each of the class weeks, excuse me. And in each of those weeks, so we start with the foundations of financial statements. And just basically understanding the geography of the financial statement first and foremost. Very few people have that understanding. Most that come in, unless they're an advanced leader already, most of them don't see much more than an income statement, if that, or P&L or doc, whatever they call it in their department. And so we give them and then we talk about the important aspects and what they have the most control over on that financial statement, primarily the balance sheet. So, the receivables and the inventories they have the most control, most impact. We call a department manager an asset manager, which is exactly what they are. And so managing those assets so that they can get the best return for the dealer. It's really no different. I'm going to dumb down an accounting lesson here real quick. It's really no different than any one of us that participates in any kind of a retirement account, 401k, what have you. You're putting your money in there and letting someone else invest it and grow it, at whatever direction, whether you want income, whether you want growth, whatever. Same thing holds true. So you're just that, a manager is just that investment manager for the dealer. And so once we get through the financial foundations, then we move into the primary departments in a dealership. And as I said earlier, we co-teach these with what we call the subject matter experts, SMEs, from the dealer group. So that we would have their accounting, CFO, controller, whomever, would teach specifics to that dealer group. Then we would move into parts, and we would have their parts experts co-teach with us that items that are specific to their dealership, same with service, and then same with sales. So the tailoring is really what I think what differentiates this from any other programs that are out there that may say, maybe they don't, but they may say, you know, they do what we do. They probably don't. I mean, we have relationships with manufacturer representatives. We have relationships with DMS representatives. And so sometimes through this program, we can help bridge those relationships with the dealer group or even simply the emerging leaders that are in it.
Yeah.
So Alan, you said that a couple questions, I guess. Okay. It sounds pretty high level. Does it get down to department specific? I mean, do you train a emerging general manager different than you train an emerging service manager, or parts manager, or used truck manager, and so forth? So who are the candidates within client?
That's a really good question, Mark. And my short answer is it really doesn't matter. What matters is that the dealer or whoever, the designees, executive leader group, or whoever it may be, that they have identified these people as emerging leaders, regardless of the department. Now, we do take them into a deep dive of each department. I mean, you can't be an organizational leader without a good or a great understanding of how a parts department functions and how a service department functions, how the sales department functions. So they're week long, 4 days, work days, each class. So we're starting with financial foundations. And then these classes go about every other month, some 8 to 10 weeks apart, depending on schedules and so on. So then we would move to parts, and then from parts to service, and then service to sales. And in between these classes, the participants have assignments to do, homework assignments to do, much like you and Keith started the call with while I was listening about the rules of two. We take them through the rules of two and actually walk them through that, and then we measure it all along the way. We have similar products that we would use for parts and for sales as well. And so those four class weeks, and then in between each class week, we have, and these are live in-person classes that the dealer group selects where they're hosted. We have some that are hosted on-site at dealerships. We've had some that are hosted in hotels where everybody comes to a central place. So, it's whatever works best for them. Again, that's that tailoring. We don't, they don't have to come to Virginia where I am or Kansas where Keith is. Although I guess if they wanted to, we could probably make that happen. But it's probably best if they're somewhere that surroundings and environment that they're most comfortable with. But in between those live classes, we have virtual check-ins. So between financial management, financial foundations and parts, in between there, 4 to 5 weeks in between, we'll have a virtual check-in, and we'll actually debrief their homework assignment from their financial foundations, and then we will prepare them for what do they need to bring for parts. And then the same type of format as we go from parts to service and service to sales. So if a dealer, to go back to your question, Mark, so if a dealer identifies a parts manager, service manager, sales manager, office manager, whoever it may be, I mean, we've had some that were not managers that have come through that they've identified that, this person's got potential to be a leader in our organization. Now, they might have more steps to get to a general manager, branch manager, or corporate position. We've had people that have been promoted during the program. We don't differentiate. The one thing that we do allow in the program is we try to keep the enrollment to 15 to 18 is really the best. We get the best results from that number. But if they were to have a new parts manager, for instance, or if they acquired a location or two that had, you know, new people, at least to their business, and the schedule was right, they could bring a parts manager to the parts class or a service manager to the service class. So we do have some specific, what we would recommend though for that is that we would put their parts team through a parts manager leadership program, but it doesn't mean they can't come. And oftentimes when that does happen, we'll see that participant that came for parts in, you know, the next class or two classes down the road. So it is designed for general knowledge. You know, it's interesting that we often hear participants, you know, if they're from a financial background, they're pretty comfortable in the financial week. When they get to parts, they have a hard time spelling parts, much less understanding it. Same with service. So, you know, we always encourage you, if your background is parts, it's okay. You'll have your opportunity to be the leader, and same with service and sales. So it is designed for, it's not specifically designed for a specific department. It is designed for up and coming leaders.
So what kind of outcomes are you seeing from these classes?
So it's interesting, Mark, that you would ask that. When we started this program with one dealer group, there is a fifth week of class, and actually the participants teach that week. And what they do through the first four class weeks, they create action plans and goals for their dealership of study or their department of study with their choice. And then they have to, they are required to create and present that action plan to the other participants and then the executives of the dealership. So those are usually 15, 20 minute presentations. We've had some that have gone a little bit longer due to, you know, interest by the executives and the participants in Q&A, but that's okay. So that's one piece, and some of those outcomes have been absolutely phenomenal, Mark, where they've identified millions of dollars of opportunity just by taking one thing. And we really, really emphasize pick one thing. And it's not always the biggest thing. It might be a small thing, but a small thing that when you can make that improvement and sustain it, then it can become a big thing over time. So that's one piece. The other piece is that most organizations, and I'm not talking just dealership groups, most organizations have more initiatives that they want to do than they can do. And so the second piece to the capstone week, we call it, is that they also do group projects. And so those group projects, the groups are usually a mix of folks with different subject matter expertise. Ideally, you know, we would have a group of four that would have a financial person, a salesperson, a parts person, and a service person, but it doesn't always work out that way. But ideally, just to give you an example, and then they are assigned a topic. And usually, most of the time, it's a topic, and those topics actually come from the dealer group, not from us. If they come from us, they don't usually work out very well. And the reason that is because it's something that matters to them, and that they can have impact and influence. So likewise, where we've had, initiatives from the dealer group that have been assigned to a small group of students, and they're usually groups of four, maybe five, no more than. So, you know, it's somewhere between four and six group presentations. Those are a little bit longer. Everyone is expected to participate in the development and delivery. And again, some absolutely phenomenal results. We typically don't share those because they are dealership specific. But I can tell you that there are some that have been absolutely huge numbers. I think, Keith, we were at a, we did one, and we couldn't pick a number from every single presentation, but between the individual or combination of the individual presentations and the group presentations, it was somewhere in the $20 million range if they were able to do everything. And
yeah,
and I know that was, they can't do everything.
Yeah, it was. I think the fascinating piece of that, Mark, is to what Alan talked about. It's not just the presentation. In many cases, they've already acted on it, right? This is something that came about because of the class. They've already started to act on it. You're seeing the metric move.
So, yeah. Do you see somewhat of a breakdown of the silos within the dealership, the department silos? You talked about them working as a team. Is that cross-functional teams?
Yeah, it is. It is. And most of these dealer groups, Mark, the silos, they exist, but they're pretty low. They're not really tall. But even so, there is some of that that's encountered. Most of that we, at least as I can, best I can recall, most of those silos exist within a location, not from the group as a whole. And even, you know, I can think of one instance in particular where it was an organizational wide silo, and the group took it on and said, we need to break it. We need to tear this down and quickly. And so, you know, they took that initiative, and I would say it was within a week of that coming up in class. I felt obligated to reach out to the president of the dealer group and let him know what happened. And this all happened like on a Thursday or Friday of our class week. I waited until Monday to call. Monday afternoon, I called, and he said, that's all right. I've already talked to a handful of the participants over the weekend. So it was that important to them that the president was not, wasn't aware of it, nor was the dealer family. So yeah, they exist, and they kind of go up and down, if you will, those silos. But, when this group is together, they really blend and mold into, they're the next leaders of this dealer group. And they have, we call it the power of the room. And, that camaraderie sticks with that group. There's a little bit of competition from previous groups to one up, and most of them usually do. Somehow, some way, they figure out how to do that. So we had you talk about this camaraderie and power of the room that develops, I think, for the first time ever, if I recall, and that's probably the first time I know about it, a group that just finished up this year, the participants, they got together during the capstone week, and they committed to being responsible and accountable as a group to implementing and executing their individual projects and the group projects that they were assigned. And I'm sure they will do that. And I'm confident that they will take on more as they continue to grow and develop.
Well, I think what was interesting about that group too, Alan, and I know you've had some other discussions with other graduating classes, if you will, of how to keep that group together moving forward. I think that's one of the powers that comes out of this.
It really is, and I think that that's the what impressed me most about that was not just the commitment of the participants, the graduates, but the commitment of the senior leadership of the dealer group. Yes, we want this, but now we expect it. And so
it sounds fantastic.
I also would say, Mark, that, I always ask this, and I don't have the numbers etched in my mind, but the retention, I mentioned that earlier, the retention of these leaders in these dealer groups is incredibly high. any turnover usually is a one-off, and it's usually somewhat unique that, you know, a family issue, not an issue, but a family matter that caused them to relocate. The retention of these leaders is incredibly high for these programs.
Wasn't that one of the discussion points, Alan, that you had with when you were debriefing with one of the groups about how their retention has changed for these?
Yes. Yes. And I can't remember the exact number, but it was very high. I think if I remember correctly, they're bumping their head on 100 total participants over the years. And I think they've had less than 10 that have moved on.
Yeah. Which is a lot different than their overall retention.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yes.
How many of these have you done, Alan? How many do we have going? Have emerging leader programs? Do we have going?
Oh goodness. Completed? I've probably completed 6 to 7 that have started and finished. That we had a little pause there during 2020, early 2021. We even actually had one group that went, or two groups actually, that went full virtual. That was somewhat challenging, but that's the way they wanted to do it, and it was effective and impactful. So probably 6, 7, 8. We have 2 right now that have started this year. We have 3 more scheduled to start over the next 6 months. We do have space on our calendar to start one more in early 2024. Can't believe I'm saying that, but it's, you know, we're just barely halfway through 2023. But what I think what's interesting, Keith and Mark, about that is that every group that has started the live, the virtuals did not, but all of the dealer groups that have had live emerging leaders programs have renewed with the next group. Right. So we have one group that I think they're on their 5th or 6th or 7th, I can't remember for sure, group that started, certainly a larger dealer group. We have a group that just started their first group this year. We have another group in the fall that will be starting their 2nd. Another one first of the year will be their 1st group. One in the spring will be their 2nd. So they're committing and committing early. And I would say most of them, if not all, well, the ones that we've been doing business with, and I would expect this the same from the newer ones, that, you know, halfway through the program, they're already identifying their next set of emerging leaders to start the next program.
Yep. Interesting.
Really good stuff.
Mark, anything else for Alan?
No, I'm impressed. Okay. I always knew Alan was a pretty smart guy. I just guess I didn't know what I didn't know about him. Okay.
Well, for a wise old guy, I'm impressed that I impressed you. So I'll take that as a compliment. You probably sensed, you know, my passion and excitement for the program, and I am. You know, I think that's the one thing I started earlier. You know, I knew one thing was missing in my career, and this is it. I know we're making a difference. We can tell by the results that the dealerships are getting, but we're also hearing that from the participants that we're making a difference in their lives, you know, professionally, personally as well. One thing I didn't say is there is a leadership component to this program, and it's every class week. So we don't necessarily carve it out by itself, but it is there. A leadership component is every week. Keith mentioned the transformation path earlier. So we come back to that every single class week, is how are you growing? How are you improving? Not only as a, you know, a manager of stuff, but as a leader of people. And it's really impactful.
And very much needed. Okay. In our industry, probably others too, but very much needed. So,
So Alan,
thank you for the invitation.
Yeah, I was going to say thank you for joining us. If you would, we'd love to have you back for another one next month, if you don't mind.
Well, I don't mind. I'd love to. You know, I'd love to talk about education with with you.
Well, we know you have a new program you're planning to launch, so maybe we can talk a little bit about that in the next one as well.
Okay.
That'd be great. I think also maybe Alan just talk a little bit about some of the other programs that you're offering, some things. And, you know, I know you've got we just introduced a parts inventory control management education program that we're piloting right now. So, you know, I think these education offerings are becoming more and more targeted, I guess I'd say. And,
right.
And, I think it's interesting. And, you know, one of the things I really look forward to visiting with you about when we get together next time is, some of the leadership education that you're doing too. I think that's fascinating stuff. So anyway, Alan, thanks a lot. Anything else you'd like to tell our listeners? Again, we know there's at least two people listening to this because Mark's had one comment and I had one.
I think I just want to close with, and this just came to me just now. And I want to, you know, when we talk about education, we talked about empowerment and equipping. I heard Steve Harvey say this, and I didn't expect it from Steve Harvey. I don't know what I expected, but this wasn't it. But what he had to say in a workshop I was participating in was this. He said, your career is what you're paid for. Your calling is what you're made for. And so I am very fortunate that my career and my calling are aligned at this point. Good. So thank you.
We're glad to have you, Alan. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank Great you. Stuff. Great stuff.
Mark, Alan's left the building, so anything you want to say about Alan since he's not here anymore?
Yeah, as I said when he was here, okay, Alan always impresses me, okay?
Yeah.
He not only knows a lot about the industry, he knows a lot about how to go about education now. So he's a valued member to our group here, our team.
Yes, he is. I tell you, we get...
Don't tell him I said that, though.
I know. I know. He'll have to listen to the podcast to hear that. But, yeah. You know, I know that just in visiting with some of the customers he's working with right now, you know, they, in particular one, and I'm really excited to see what happens. You mentioned the service manager candidates. That's one of the folks that Alan's been working with and building the profile, right? The profile service manager.
Right.
Whatever we call it, attributes. And I think he's going to put the candidates through that phase next week. And be funny to see, or not funny. It's going to be interesting to see how those match up and the recommendations we give to the customer. And customer's really excited about it. So,
yeah.
So good stuff. Mark, anything else for our listeners before we go? We've been here for about an hour.
Nope. Just call us if you want to know more information, okay, or email us or text us. My grandkids taught me how to text, so however you want to get a hold of me, okay?
That's good.
Or Keith or Alan.
There we go.
Okay, we didn't tell them how to get a hold of Alan, okay?
Yeah, so how about Alan@KEAAdvisors.com? How about that,
that'll
Mark?
That'll work.
And it's A-L-L-E-N. It's the wrong way of spelling Alan, but... Alan@keyadvisors.com. So I think John will be back with us next time, Mark. So
great.
We'll get the band back together and interview Alan one more time. And then, I think for the remainder of the year, if I remember right, we've got some accounting that we're going to discuss. We might even have the hardest department in the dealership brought on board, which is parts. I get some people talking about that. So
we'll have that discussion in a bar somewhere. So
there we go. There we go. Mark, thanks again for taking time. It's always a pleasure. And thank you out there for listening to the podcast. We really appreciate it. And we appreciate the opportunity to be of service to all of you. If you'd like to reach us, as Mark said, just go to keyadvisors.com. Just leave us a message. We'll get back with you. You can email info@keyadvisors.com or Mark or Alan or Keith or anybody else that you'd like to email.
And if you have ideas what you'd like us to talk about, we can work them into the schedule. We can always do more of these. If you have ideas you want us to talk about, we're willing to do that. And
last thing, Mark, is that I know that a couple of our folks have been selected to speak at the ATD convention in February. We're looking forward to that. And
we'll be there. Got
our sponsorship for them, and got our booth, and we'll all be there. So,
yeah, if you've never met us in person, come on out.
Maybe we should record a live one there.
Maybe we should do that. That might be one of your better ideas.
Well, there we go.
Okay.
There we go. We could have a giveaway. People could register to be a guest on our podcast live from ATD.
Well, I was thinking about a roving reporter live.
There we go.
Okay. You know, give me a microphone and some hard questions to ask, and just find people walking around.
There we go.
Okay, we might be able to have some fun with that.
We could. Mark, thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you, Keith.
Okay. We'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Three Wise Truck Guys, the podcast from Key Advisors. We'd love to hear from you. Send us feedback, comments, and questions to info@keyadvisors.com.